Hi, my name is Ricky Adamson, and welcome to Vista Higher Learning's podcast series, The Language Imperative. Vista's commitment for the past 25 years has been providing language solutions. We're proud to sponsor and share the work of those organizations, institutions, and individuals that serve and strengthen language education for all. As the preeminent language and literacy publisher in the United States, Vista's singular focus is empowering you as a language educator with the tools and research-based knowledge that you need to meet the needs of all learners. Whether you're guiding students in learning a new language, improving an additional language, or perfecting their native language, Vista is for you. Thank you for letting us share this podcast with you. Today, I'd like to introduce you to Ryan Smith. Many of you know Ryan Smith in the world language community, but for those who don't, Ryan, first, welcome. And could you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Sure. Thank you, Ricky. First of all, thank you so much for having me as a guest today on this podcast. Yes, my name is Ryan Smith. I am entering my 26th year in education. Very proud of that number, actually. I have worked in all levels now. So I was a Spanish teacher for 16 years in high school, as well as a department leader for world languages. After that, I moved into central office as the world language coordinator for Washoe County School District in Reno, Nevada. Started dabbling in some other areas while I was doing that, such as dual credit, career and technical education, AVID. And then what happened was I really wanted to start working with students and teachers again. So I threw my name in the hat for an assistant principal position at a middle school and became their assistant principal over discipline during COVID and distance learning, which, as you can imagine, was very challenging. I taught a world languages teaching methodology course at our university. And now I'm entering my third year as principal of Glen Duncan Elementary School. And so I'm very proud of my journey and all the experiences that have gotten me here.
Yeah, you should be proud. That's impressive. 26 years and all of those experiences. So you have a lot of insight and you have a lot of different perspectives from those experiences you've had. So, you know, I know one of the things that's important to you is language development in elementary school students. So tell us a little bit about that.
Gosh, what a great question. I so wish, so my pipe dream, my pie in the sky is that every elementary student in the country would have the opportunity to begin their language journey in elementary school. And as you and I both know, unfortunately, that's not the case everywhere. But with popularity of dual immersion programs, I kind of feel that this opportunity could be something that more students have in the future. As we know, the earlier people begin their language journeys, the better. I see it in my own school daily because we have about 60% English learners at my school. And several of them are newcomers, which means they have been in the United States in the school for less than a year, pretty much. So most of them use their native language at school. I feel like I landed at the right place to help these students because if they're Spanish speakers, I will only speak Spanish to them throughout the day, and you could see this sigh of relief that someone understands what they're saying. But I see what I've really been noticing with these students is how fast they learn English. So they're obviously in a completely immersive environment where teachers are, you know, they'll use a couple Spanish words here and there if they can, but they're in this immersive environment of English, and it just blows my mind how quickly they pick up phrases and little nuances. And so it has really made me even think about learning that second language in elementary school even more. They're little sponges and they absorb everything. They don't question things. They don't have a lot of these rules running through their head all the time. So they just accept the challenges of the language. And so I see it as really the perfect age to begin that journey. And I hope we're going to get to see it, Ricky, in our career lifetime, that all students will have that opportunity.
Yeah, I hope so as well. And you mentioned, with the 60% of English learners in your building. So I would imagine that that's also a great benefit to the 40% who aren't Spanish speakers, who aren't those English learners, because they're benefiting from that. And I would suspect that that would also excite them about learning some Spanish or learning other languages. Have you noticed?
Oh, absolutely. The other students are so curious, and they know I was a former Spanish teacher. So students are always very excited to come up to me throughout the day telling me what they've learned in Spanish. And we don't even offer Spanish as a language at this school, but I've really incorporated that into our culture to make it a language-rich environment in all languages. But it really warms my heart when students in the lunchroom will come up to me and kind of show off what they learned, what their friend taught them in class that day. So it's really awesome to see that excitement and that genuine innocence and love of learning.
Oh, yeah. And at that age, they definitely, as you said, they soak everything up, and you've planted the seed for them with languages. So that will be something they are looking forward to as they progress through the years. Can you talk also a little bit about using some of your experiences that you've had about those connections for languages outside the classroom? You mentioned students coming up to you in the cafeteria. I realize that's still in the school setting, but it is outside of the classroom academic setting. So it's a start for those elementary kids, So can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, absolutely. So when I see teachers, for example, they're teaching students sight words in the primary grades. And so in elementary, there's a certain amount of sight words that are the most common words in English that students learn every single year. We have several teachers now that teach those sight words in English and in Spanish to all the students. So that's our language sneak attack to get it in there, right? Because, all of this, like we said, sponges, all of this exposure within the classroom, students don't question it. They take it at face value and they internalize it. And so what's really wonderful about this is when we have students that have just moved here from different countries and they see their teacher making that effort to teach sight words in English and in Spanish, it just has so many advantages. They feel safer in our school. They feel like their teacher is trying to make an effort to learn part of their culture. And they're being celebrated for what they bring to the school. Which, of course, we never want to deflate students on their experience or their knowledge. So they do. They bring this amazing skill with them. But I want to go back. I just thought of something when we were talking about the cafeteria. So I call our cafeteria the Duncan Student Union. It's more exciting than the cafeteria. And it has that connection to higher education and opportunities. But right in the middle of the Duncan Student Union, I have our Nevada State Seal of Biliteracy poster that students stare at every single day while they're eating lunch. And what's great is they ask questions about it. You know, what does that mean? You know, what does they can't pronounce biliteracy, but they try. And it starts that conversation at such a young age. I mean, some of these kids we're talking about are in kindergarten or even pre-K. So to have that conversation starting about, you know, what they can do, where they can go in the future with languages, I mean, that's a huge game changer. And I think it opens a lot of doors for students.
Yeah, and you know, it's planting that seed, as we've kind of mentioned, for the students. And it's refreshing to hear that even in the elementary school, they are setting those goals. They're seeing that. You're introducing them to that, to the syllabi literacy. But also, one of the things you mentioned, which I think still connects with everything, is how your teachers are incorporating Spanish now, which the students, as you said, they're being celebrated. They feel seen, and coming at them with an asset-based approach rather than deficit, which can only help them all on their journey. So, you know, with the seal of biliteracy, as they progress, I could see them really getting focused on languages, which I love that you're planting that seed for them.
Yes, thank you. So when our students leave fifth grade to go to middle school, I see the excitement in their faces that Spanish is a choice of a class for their next school year. And they all want to take it now. And I encourage them, you know, like I said, we have a really large population of ELD students. I encourage them, hey, just take Spanish. Oh, but Mr. Smith, my mom speaks Spanish to me at home. Yes, but you need to grow the skill that you already come with to become proficient, to use it as a skill. You know, it could be a job skill, life skill in your future. So start this journey now. And really exciting that our middle school, which we're right next door, it's like a 1 minute walk away. Their Spanish classes have increased enrollment due to our Duncan students' interests coming in to the middle school.
Well, that's impressive. I say that as having been a middle school teacher for three of my years that I taught in the classroom. And it makes me think of what it might have been like even if in elementary school they'd had a school experience like you were giving the students, where languages are honored, they're celebrated, students are setting goals with them, you know, what could be. And I see that you mentioned, you know, we'd like to see that across the country. And I would love to see that across the country in every state, where students are, from that early age, loving languages and then getting to middle school and they're so excited about it. That's really great.
Absolutely. I mean, there's so many connections we can make for younger students in languages. I always like to, I theme everything at Duncan around career clusters. So for example, we have careers in education and human services month. We have careers in health sciences. We have careers in public safety, careers in the arts. And I do that because I don't think we expose students enough in school to future possibilities. But I also really think that you can connect language, no matter what language, to any future career cluster and really give it the why. Why does it matter? Why is it important? Why should I invest my time to do something that's going to be probably a little bit challenging for me?
Yeah, and you know, that also makes me reflect, you know, the one thing world language teachers hate is when a student says, why do I have to learn this? And if they know how they're going to use this in careers you know, as they're moving along, they know the importance of it. They see the importance, and they can see themselves in those careers and not just this idea that I'm going to use a language to travel, to go on vacation, to take a, you know, a 9-day trip with my teacher. So, you know, that's one of the things I think that the focus on here's how it's going to help you in your career, in your future, really helps drive that point home. I love that you do that.
Thank you. You know, it's what I believe to the core. Our seal of biliteracy was a game changer because I view it and promote it as a job industry certification. You can take your transcript, you can take your diploma, and you have certification that you're biliterate. And even if we don't talk about the language aspect of it, if you talk about biliteracy as communication skills, interpersonal skills, learning how to read body language, learning how to work with other people that may be different from you. You know, there's so much that's deeper than the language that comes with that seal of biliteracy seal, that we really need to, you know, it's a complete package. It's a package deal. And I always promote it to students as that job industry certification. Just like you get a welding certification or robotics certification. Here you have a language certification that means not only do you speak and understand and you can read and write, but you actually understand people also.
Yeah, and you know, that's important, and as cliche as it sounds, in building bridges, you know, across cultures. One of the things in one of my grad classes that a teacher said to me once that really stuck with me in talking about cultures and the importance of students understanding cultures and learning about other cultures, she said, cultures are different. They're not wrong. They're just different. And I think that's important. And I think the seal of biliteracy helps also drive that point home.
Absolutely. I mean, how exciting is it to be a teacher right now in world languages? There's so many resources. There's so much assistive technology. There's so much more access. I look at teachers right now in world languages and I think, dang, I was in the wrong decade of teaching this subject. Like, I would love being in the AI generation, using some of these incredible tools to make language more accessible to all students. You know, one of the things I'm afraid that we did back in the day, I'll say, you know, when I was a teacher or when I was a student, is we limited students. We had so many prerequisites and qualifications and barriers from learning a language. And I'm so glad to see that those are going away now. You know, another thing I have a really strong opinion about is if we believe language is important, it has to be important for all, not just the students that can travel or the students that can study abroad. It has to be important for our EL learners, it has to be important for students on an IEP because it's a job skill, right? You know, they deserve to have a great job opportunity also in the future.
Yeah, and I'm glad you mentioned that because I was just about to ask when you had mentioned something about, you said, for all, about the inclusivity of it and making sure that all students have the opportunity. As you mentioned, you've said so many things that remind me of my experience both as a student and as a teacher. And I remember in middle school taking French. That's where it started for me. But I had to take a test at the end of seventh grade to see if I had the aptitude, as they said at the time, to take French. So in the end, 15 students were able to take French, only 15 out of 327. And it's great to see that that's changing, that there's a place for everyone and that it benefits everyone. As I've told people before, when they've asked, they say, oh, I can't learn a language. I said, you learned English, didn't you? And usually that sends a light bulb off in their head that, oh, well, I guess I did. I said, then you can learn a language. It's not, you know, determined by which classes you took in school, advanced, regular, or if you had an IEP. You know, it's for you. So I'm glad to hear that that's something you're also passionate about.
And, you know, I think people can learn anything if they have the right teacher. If they have a teacher that loves them and inspires them and cares for them, they're going to learn anything. Even if they don't want to learn it, they're going to learn it. And, you know, we have such a focus now on instruction and high leverage teaching practices and how to make classes engaging for our audience. You know, our audience is different right now. After COVID, our audience is completely different. And I love how there is a focus right now on engagement in the classroom, because that's what's going to elevate the students. That's what's going to get them to proficiency. That's what's going to make them feel successful so they want to go on. That's why students don't go on languages, is because they don't feel successful in it. We don't want to do things where we're not feeling good about ourselves or that intrinsic success, like, hey, wow, I just did it. I got this. And teaching students to be resilient. And, you know, it's okay to fall down. It's just how we get back up and keep going. You know, that makes us stronger every time. Same thing in language. You know, you can have a hard day, a hard assessment, but you know what? Get back up. If you have the right teacher, that teacher is going to help you back up and keep on moving along. And I love that. There's such a focus in education now with SEL and you know, all the acronyms, but it's really good for kids.
Yeah. And, you know, it's starting to show that there's, for students, when they start seeing that their teachers really are caring for them, that they become their biggest cheerleader. That right there makes a student want to do better, makes them want to see how far they can go, even after they fall down. You know, I made mistakes in the classroom, in the language. I told the students, oh, that was wrong. But, you know, that's a lesson. That's a lesson for them. It was a lesson for me. And, you know, it's important that they have those type teachers, I believe, that really become that cheerleader for them. And I really do believe also that, you know, we need to take a look at languages for, you know, underserved communities. I know that's something you're also passionate about.
Absolutely. So, again, my school that I am so proud to lead is very underserved. We are 100% free and reduced lunch. We are the lowest socioeconomic status in the school district. I love it. I couldn't ask for a better location for me, because I create a culture of care and kindness throughout the school. And I'm just so proud of the teachers and how they care for our students. Students are excited about learning. Students are excited about being in class with their friends, with their teacher. They consider their teacher their friends. They consider me their friend. I don't know. when I was in school, I never considered, I was scared of the principal. I have kids, my door's always open for them, and I probably get like 50 visitors per day throughout the school day. Students will pop in, just chat with me about what's going on. They'll tell me about what they're learning in class. And I love that environment so much. And so what we're talking about, underserved communities, what I've seen from having this experience and my experience at the middle school is we tend to throw programs at students and at teachers. We bog students and teachers down with ELA and math, right? Because those are what's tested at the state, right? And we need good test scores at the state. So unfortunately, in underserved communities, students are missing out on opportunities like PE, like art, electives, you know, which would include languages, things that engage students in school. I've made it a point here to not do more of something, but to do what we do better. Like edit. We got to edit. We have too much going on. And, you know, and we could be missing these golden opportunities. So students could become proficient in another language. So students could become the next robot designer. So they could become the next musician, you know, the next Taylor Swift. Swifty, yes.
Yeah, and you know, the thing that I always tried to impress, which it sounds like what you do, is when the focus is on ELA and math because of the test scores, I used to always try to show that, you know, languages, that's where all of those quote unquote core classes come together. We do it all. There's literacy, there's social studies, there's science, there's math involved. And we really are robbing the kids when we don't give them those opportunities. And not only are we robbing the kids, but we're actually robbing the other teachers that are teaching those courses because we can help them.
Absolutely. We have to ditch the terminology core and electives. It's so antiquated. And it puts you in a mindset, right? If it's an elective, it's already less important. It's just the mindset. And, you know, I don't want to diss math and ELA completely, right? They're super important. We have to learn how to read. We have to understand math concepts. But it's the way we go about teaching these subjects for these high stakes tests that sometimes we miss really good opportunities. And I think those opportunities come in the form of what the system calls electives.
Yes. And, you know, whether it's called electives or in one district I was in, it was encore. And another district, it was called ancillary. You know, I love the idea of ditching it because every teacher in a school, in a building, we're partners, you know, and yes, there are those test scores. But what I found, and I'm sure you've found, is that I taught English once. One year I had to teach 10th and 12th grade English. Well, I taught it the way I taught French, and it worked. So, you know, but I also learned from ELA teachers strategies to use, just like they can learn from us, you know, which helps kind of, I hate to say level the playing field, but in getting rid of that idea of core versus elective.
Absolutely. And I would just imagine that your class was very successful because language teachers just in general use so many strategies that you can, you know, a strategy is a strategy. You can use it to teach anything. And so I would imagine that you used those in those high leverage teaching practices in your ELA class, just like you would in your French class. I wish I had a similar story for you. I did teach math my first year teaching. I taught two sections of it and then four Spanish sections. And I did not use those high leverage teaching strategies in math. And it was pretty disastrous, actually. I learned about myself that I was really when I was nervous about the content, I couldn't be that engaging, loving, caring teacher who I am, because that content was just a roadblock for me. So luckily, I was reassigned the next year out of math. I don't think they wanted to do that again to the poor kids, to complete world languages. But I'm so thankful I had that experience. Taught me so much about the importance of engaging strategies and putting actually the content second and focusing on relationships first.
I agree. When you put the student first, everything else will fall into place. You know, if you lose sight of the student, then you can cover page one to the end of a textbook and the kid still doesn't know what's going on necessarily. Yeah. But when they know you care, as we were saying, that you're their cheerleader, they'll move forward. They will want to learn more.
That's how being in this role now as principal and hiring people, I sit across from candidates and think, who is the perfect person for my students? Who is going to love them, care for them, nurture them, inspire them, and hold them to really high expectations? If anyone can learn content, I could teach people math content. I could teach people ELA content. I can't teach people how to love and care for students.
Right. You have to have that already, you know. And I will say, and maybe I'm biased in this as a former French teacher and, you know, director of world languages, but I find language teachers to love on kids. You know, I work with teachers now across the country. I see it still, that world language teachers love on the kids, and they go that extra mile to do what they need to do to help those students succeed.
Absolutely. I would echo that statement, especially because, you know, in my career in world languages, I really notice the dedication and the passion people have for their content area. You know, there's workshops all summer long. There's conferences throughout the year. There are webinars. There's so much involvement in the world language field that's just proof of how invested the teachers really are. And that, you know, that trickles down into the classroom. That's why students are earning seals of biliteracy across the country, because they feel successful. They know their teachers care about them and want them to succeed. So I really do notice it for world language teachers as well.
And speaking again of the seal of biliteracy, do you feel as if it has somewhat re-energized the world language community, world language teachers, now that there's a, I hate to just use it, you know, it's a tangible goal. It's something that really, you know, has importance to it.
I think it has completely revolutionized the profession, because now we can't say that, oh, we're just the French class, or we're just the Spanish class, we're just the German class. We have now that certification, that job life skill certification students get at the end of their K-12 education. And it just, it means so much. And one thing I know as a principal is principals love competition. They love to be number one of anything. Not the number one, like worst on the worst list, but but they love to be number one with, say, seals of biliteracy. So when we were rolling this out in Nevada, I was really fortunate. I got to be on the team that rolled it out to all the school districts. And, you know, it was a new initiative. We weren't really sure about the trajectory. We weren't really sure what the data was going to show us after students left high school. So we've come up with ways of tracking that, how many students go into a higher ed program to continue their languages. How many students do use their language in their jobs? But the great thing about this was when we were developing the plan, we came up with ways high schools could celebrate all the students that earned a seal of biliteracy, whether it was at graduation, they had a special portion of the graduation where they would dedicate to seal of biliteracy. The best event I saw was here in one of our high schools. They invited me to announce all the names the first year of their seniors who were earning the seal of biliteracy. And Ricky, it brought tears to my eyes because I think they had like probably between 30 and 40 students that earned the seal. This school, very similar demographics to the school I work at. Families were coming to this ceremony. It's probably at 10:30 in the day. Whole families were coming just to hear their student's name announced, what language they earned a seal for. It was like a graduation ceremony. And families brought flowers and balloons, and the abuelos and abuelas were there cheering on. And I looked out into the crowd, and these families had tears in their eyes, especially the older family members, because they were so proud seeing their kid or their grandkid being recognized for excelling in their home language. It was just, I'll never forget what that ceremony felt like that day. And so we copied it. We copied it at several schools. And, you know, when the language teachers, they really couldn't say anymore that, hey, we're just down the hall or out in the mobiles. No, we have ceremonies just honoring languages in our schools, which is great. We've come a long way pretty quickly.
Yeah, that's wonderful. And, you know, the fact that those families were there, it shows that it's not just a success for that one student. It's a success for the whole family. It means something to the whole family. And, you know, kind of going back to some of the things we've talked about, you know, the importance of language in elementary school and inclusivity, do you think the seal of biliteracy, could it be that key that helps get languages into the elementary schools?
Yes, 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 yes. I think if we pair, there's a big push right now for dual credit. Students earning college credit by taking high school classes. In our school district now, we have several dual credit courses in languages. Because students are earning seal of biliteracy or meeting the qualifications at a pretty early age, which is very exciting. I think that if you look at the seal of biliteracy and dual credit, I think that's what's going to show our community, our decision makers, our leaders, that this actually really does matter, and it makes a huge impact on our students. You know, we want to provide our students with all the tools for success, and that is a huge tool for success.
Yeah, and I think, you know, the fact of that, you know, you mentioned, well, me included, maybe teaching in the wrong decade or whatever, but, you know, still being part of the world language community, you know, the future is bright with all of this. And it's really exciting to see where things are headed. So, you know, as we kind of wrap up today, do you have any last thoughts you want to share with the world language community?
I just want to thank everyone for all the hard work they do for students every single day, and for all of the fight and advocacy, the passion that comes along with it. You know, I know that unfortunately when there's allocations, a lot of language teachers are on the chopping block every single year. And you know, they stick it out. They stay in the profession. They show up in August with that energy and that passion again to make a difference. So I'm just still, I wasn't supposed to be a language teacher. I fell into it by accident. I wasn't a very good student in school. But you know, languages and language education is why I'm sitting here right now as principal of an elementary school. I would have never gone into teaching if someone didn't instill that passion for Spanish in me when I was a high school and college student. And when I added teaching to the repertoire, it just changed my life. And I owe it to one teacher who inspired me to go on to college to give back to the community. And I will just, that always has a place in my heart.
Well, you know, and languages, they truly can change the trajectory of your life. And you just explained that, how they can. They improve your life. They change the trajectory of your life. Well, Ryan, I thank you so much for visiting with me today and talking a little bit about languages, you know, across elementary all the way, you know, past college. And I look forward to seeing where the profession goes, but I also look forward to seeing all the success you and your students have at your school.
Oh, thank you, Ricky. I really appreciate that.
Thank you so much for listening to this podcast. As an educator, you have the power to reimagine and reshape education. Vista Higher Learning is committed to giving you the best programs, resources, information, and support to ensure that your students succeed in school and in life. We are committed to being your partner in education, and thank you for letting us be there for you and your students. For more information about Vista solutions for your K-12 classroom, visit VistaHigherLearning.com.